Join us as we gather around the hedge, where we dig into technology, business, and culture with the finest minds in computer networking.
Well, hello, Tom. How are you today?
Hi, Russ. I'm doing fabulously today.
I am going to come to your house and see if that plant is a real plant or a plastic one.
Come on over. We'll have you for dinner, and you can verify the authenticity of my living plant.
Because it looks too good. It just can't be real. Do you even dust it, that thing?
Who dusts plants? What? No. No. My wife waters it. That's how it's alive.
There we go. Now we have the answer.
That's right. And we have Yvonne with us. And Yvonne,
I'm here.
That is a plastic plant in your background. I know it is.
Yes, it is. But can you see the tiny little non-pot that it's in? I haven't moved my bigger pot back out here yet. So I'm in the shed. And yeah, I do have some live plants I haven't moved back out here yet. Pothos for the win. They're really hard to kill. And snake plants, where I was reading about them lately, and snake plants thrive on neglect was the phrase I read. And I'm like, that is the house plant for me.
Wow. Thrive on neglect.
Yeah.
This is kind of reminds me of children. I was actually reading this thing the other day that said that children, you know, we give them too much attention. And they don't thrive because we give them too much attention. I can't remember exactly what the phrase was he used, but my wife was like, what?
There's a happy medium. Like, yeah. You know, they need attention and they need care, but they also need independence.
Yep.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So, all right. So this week on the round table, because this is the round table show, we were going to talk through, I'm talking at KYNOG. On Thursday, like 2 days from now, something, whatever it is. So Yvonne is going to be listening to me speak and giving color commentary. And I know that Yvonne is going to be able to talk while I'm speaking, so that's okay.
This is my chance to speak to his talk and to heckle him, but not do it in person.
Well, I'm sure you'll be doing plenty of heckling in person, too. It's fine. So we thought we'd talk through the presentation, which I have called Are We There Yet? And
no.
No.
There's the answer.
Okay, we're done. That was it. So I don't know. I know that I have been doing this network engineering since the late 1980s. Something like that. I have been doing this since the late 1890s, early, I don't know, whatever it was. It must have been 91, 92, 93, 87, maybe it was 87 when I got into computer networking. And it's really funny because I have heard the same things the whole time that I've been in networking. It has never changed. I can remember going to a Cabletron demo where they said you just plug everything in and it works.
And plug and play.
Plug and play, baby. And you don't have to do anything. It's just going to work. And so that's kind of where I started this, was like, okay, we have been promised that the network will be self-driving, autonomous, easy to build. It's going to be like plumbing. It's just going to work. It's going to be secure and private. Tony P always says, scaling the network will be like adding memory to your computer. And my favorite right now is if you move to the cloud, you don't have to think about the network. You just outsource all that effort and all that stuff.
I'll just say, I have an entire peer group, a peer team of mine, that are cloud networking subject matter experts. And I think they would argue with you that when you move to cloud, networking goes away. So, yeah. Well, actually, they would agree with your point. They would argue with the statement that networking goes away when you move to cloud. Yeah.
Exactly. And so far, absolutely none of this has happened. Right? I mean, do we have self-driving networks that are autonomic and just do what they're going to do, and we can just plug it and play it, and it doesn't, you don't have to think about it? I don't know of any networks that are like that.
One of my favorite anecdotes is that I was working for an organization that its stated goal was to have a quote unquote self-healing network. Except the manager of the network team really didn't like the idea of using dynamic routing protocols. He wanted to assign everything with static routes.
Okay. Well, I mean,
sounds self-healing to me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one way around it, I suppose. I guess you could do that, but like just write scripts and just have it ping everywhere, and then when the ping fails, you just go in and change the static routes.
Right, right. Right. A dumber, slower, more ridiculous routing protocol.
Oh, now come on! You know, when Kubernetes first came out and Docker, they did the whole thing where everything was just NATed. So right. You didn't route; you just NATed. Like you don't actually have a routing protocol; you just NAT. So I had three reasons, and actually kind of three and a half reasons why I think we are where we are, that we really haven't gotten any better as far as complexity. In fact, things have gotten more complex and harder in many ways. I will say we've moved up the stack. When I first started in networking, my big concerns were things around optical interfaces and copper interfaces and FIDI versus token bus and ARCNET and ARCNET cards and... You know, we were very worried about the chipset. We would go to vendors and ask about the chipset on the network, on the NICs that we were buying, to make sure we had the right chipset and the right drivers and stuff like that. We've moved far beyond that, but we've just like moved up and made things more complex in other areas. So I kind of had three reasons. The first is we've totally ignored complexity. And I say this all the time, and I think people get tired of me saying it, but I still think it's true. We ignore complexity. The second is we are hedgehogs. And yeah, that's kind of ironic on the hedge. I'm making the claim that we are hedgehogs. Which, by the way, the whole reason we called it this is because, like, first of all, hedges are great places to talk to other people. And second of all the network engineers I know are like hedgehogs. You get too close to them and they hiss and roll up in a ball and stick their little spiky things out and tell you to go away. So... That's kind of my impression. But anyway, the third thing is we still don't communicate. We are horrible at communicating in every way possible. Agree, disagree? Am I on the right track with any of these? Do y'all have any like...
It's interesting to me that two of your main problems aren't technical. Two of your three problems aren't technical. I agree.
No, actually, they're all three not technical.
Complex. Well, what we've done with a technical subject, I guess, but the other two are just totally not even having anything to do with technology.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I was in a conversation with some friends how AI is going to fix things like global warming. And my point was, wait, global warming is not primarily the problems with global warming are not primarily technical. They are nation states and with people and corporations making decisions, right? And so to think like not every problem has a technical solution is how I would say that, right? Yeah.
In fact, I would say very few problems actually have technical solutions. You can use technology to help you solve a social problem or a problem in your life, but... there aren't many problems that have purely technical solutions. So the next thing I say is one of my favorite sayings that you'll hear me say all the time, if you're ever around my house hanging out, is like, you don't fix blame, you fix problems. You don't start with whose fault is this. You actually try to figure out, okay, how do I go about, since I recognize there's a problem, the problem is we really want to be someplace, a particular place. We're not there. We haven't ever gotten there. How do we try to fix that rather than placing blame on people? So the first thing is ignoring complexity. We have two things that we say in two or three things we say in our world about complexity. The first is complexity doesn't matter as long as the interface is simple. or as long as it's automated, which is still the same thing. I want it to be like a car. I get in and I drive. Or it drives for me. I don't even want to. I mean, I hear this all the time now. I don't even want to drive. I want the car to take care of that for me. I shouldn't care about how it all works. I just want to drive it. So that's one thing we often say about complexity. The other thing we often say about complexity is it doesn't matter as long as we can achieve a specific goal. We just don't care how complex it is as long as we're getting something done. And by the way, a lot of times we do this because the business comes to us and says, we want to do X. And we say, all right, yay, the business is asking me for something. I'm going to go do X and impress my manager. I'm going to impress the VP by doing X because they ask me to. And like we put on our little network engineering capes and we say, ooh, I'm going to go do X because, you know, whatever. And I think that's a completely wrong way of going about things, honestly, that is a bad way of doing things. But those are my two thoughts on complexity. Any thoughts on those two before I jump into the next little section?
I think the idea that you don't need to care about how it works is probably true to an extent, but it can't be made so that you don't need to care about how it works unless it's made at scale by a vendor. And if it's made at scale by a vendor, then that means that you're getting the exact same product and the exact same attachment to your business as all of your competitors. And, you know, a lot of popular business leadership wisdom is that you shouldn't waste time on things that are not your product or your value, that everything, absolutely everything else that's not directly the thing you're making should be done by somebody else. I'm not sure it actually works all that well in business academia. It seems to be like a standard trope, but
yeah,
I think it does matter how technology attaches to your business, even when it's not your primary product.
Go ahead, sorry, Tom.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if it doesn't matter, then everybody's driving the same car, and then your space for innovation is going to get squeezed, and your ability to deliver your actual product is actually going to get squeezed. You're going to constrain yourself.
Yeah. I think that's absolutely true. I once had a conversation when I worked for a big chemical company, and I was asking this vice president in charge of IT, for the chemical company, for at least the North American operations or whatever. It's a big multinational. And I said, so should we do this or should we do that? And he said, honestly, the business doesn't really care because we're a chemical company. We're not an IT company. We don't care how the IT works. We just deliver chemicals. And then I said, okay, understood. But let me ask something. How do we know what chemicals to buy to put into our chemical plants, and when to buy them, and what the trends are in the market? And he said, well, we know all of that because of our IT systems. And I'm like, well, how do we know where the chemicals are in the pipeline? What's been ordered, what hasn't been ordered, who's ordered? Well, that's all IT as well. I'm like, well, we can call ourselves a chemical company all day long, but without the IT, who cares about the chemicals, right? Once you get above a hot dog stand on a corner, information is the key. And so I don't care what business you're in the information business. And we don't push back in that way often enough with that attitude of, I don't really care how IT works. And I don't think it gives me any competitive advantage to how my IT works versus yours. Well, you know, go tell Amazon sometime.
Well, and I think this is going to dovetail with your third item, which was communication. But when we don't talk in ways that are intelligible to people outside of our knowledge domain, they don't really understand the trade-offs that they're making. Right. So they'll say, you know, things like, well, this can never go down. I was again having a conversation with some folks, was talking about some IT leadership that was like, well, things just can't go down. We zero outages. And while that sounds good, it's typically said like on an outage call. And the challenge that we have to push back on is, in that scenario, is look, we can either plan and architect for failures and have some control over where and when the failures happen, or we don't, and then the failures are random, and we don't have any control over the scale and size of them. I mean, it's why anybody who does site reliability at any scale has something called an error budget. This is the amount of time, the amount of outage we're willing to take. And I think, so the impossibilities, well, this can never go down. Well, this maybe we want the appearance of the system never going down holistically, but there are parts and components of the system that all will go down at some point because they need upgrades, because they need migrations. And so we've got to find ways to talk in a language that the business understands and to kind of quantify if there's an outage, what it means, or if there's risk, what it would mean to the business, and then quantify it as costs versus the risk avoidance a lot of times. And we have struggled as an industry to develop the business savvy to have those conversations, and that goes back to not just complexity but the communication piece as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So the second thing on my list there was hedgehogs. And what do I mean by that? You know, there's the old common saying that was by Achilles, I think it is, that says the hedgehog, the fox knows many things, but the hedgehog knows one big thing. And we live in a culture, in my opinion, in IT, where we are hedgehogs. We know one big thing. And that is good in some circumstances, but it is very bad in many other circumstances. We'll go back to the book Range, right, Yvonne? Yeah, right. The power of being a generalist in a specialist world, and that is a problem for us. I would play, if I went and talked to any network engineer, and I just ran into this last week, not just with network engineers, but with coders. We were talking about a new database in a meeting at some point last week, and somebody said, well, it arranges the data somehow differently, but I don't know what difference that makes. I just know it's faster. And I'm like, okay, see, that's hedgehog, okay? That's hedgehog. That is, all I know is how to configure it, and I know how to drive it, but I don't know anything about how it works or why it works that way or anything else. And I hear this all the time. People do interviews in networking world and we say, how would you configure Junos or Cisco IOS or something to do this? Like, nobody really cares how you configure it. I don't care anyway. And yet that's what we get fixated on, is we get fixated on configuration, hardware and software, knowing in detail not how things work, but how to use them. And
I think,
go ahead, Tom.
I was just going to say, I think knowing one big thing is good. We definitely need people that know one big thing. But in order for knowing one big thing to stay relevant, someone at some point has to be able to tell the person paying the bills why that one big thing matters to the company. I think we put ourselves in at risk by being the hedgehog and not being, and depending on someone else, whether it's a manager or a project manager or somebody else, to communicate to the business why we need this person, why they still need to be on the payroll. We think, oh, well, it's self-evident why I'm here, and anyone who doesn't understand that just isn't smart enough and blah, blah, blah. But at some point, someone has to tell the business why you're relevant. And if it's not you, then you put your outcome in someone else's hands.
Yeah.
When this goes to another idea that I don't know if Russ is going to hit on it or not, but it's in his talk track, is that, you know, not working alone, right? And to have a collection of folks with varying levels of expertise across various domains. And then also in that, you know, group, having somebody who can pull all those pieces together and make the argument to the business, because the challenge is any particular technical domain is so deep that it is physically impossible for any one person to have expertise across all of those, right? Yeah. If you're talking about like data and analytics or networking or compute and infrastructure, and you need, and storage, right? You need all of those things to have a functioning system. So it's not that you don't need the depth, but you need we as an industry need to understand that somebody has also got to carry that message forward and explain why it matters. And we seem to fall down there, I feel like.
Yeah. I would actually argue that in most network engineers, the broad, normal network engineer needs to be less of a hedgehog and more of a fox, more of a generalist. And we'll talk about this later, probably more, but that hedgehogs are more at home in vendors, on the vendor side of things and on the development side of things and building things, than they are on the operations and the design and architecture side of things. And that, you know, if I want to be an optical specialist, that's great, but I've got to be at a company that's either big enough to need an optical specialist or a vendor that does optics or sells optics as part of what they do, basically. If I want to be knee-deep in troubleshooting every day or up to my neck in troubleshooting every day, I need to be at a company that's large enough or at a vendor where I'm going to have enough scope to have problems coming in constantly, so I'm practicing those troubleshooting skills all the time. Whereas if I'm working for Joe Blow Enterprise, the fact is I'm troubleshooting maybe 4 or 5 times a year in a big problem. And so am I ever going to be the expert at troubleshooting that somebody who's worked in Cisco or Juniper or Nokia Tech for the last 20 years has? Probably not, because they have 20 years experience doing it. And I have, you know, 2 or 3 times a year for the last 20 years. So there is this feeling that there's a choice to be made between being a hedgehog and being a fox, being more of a generalist and more of a specialist. But you have to choose intelligently depending on where you want to go with it and where you want to work. So that's kind of...
Yeah, well, in my comment, you sort of summed it up there, Russ, but that we also, like, part of this goes to understanding the business, understanding right. The business that we're in and what the business needs from us. Does the business and the role we're in need us to be a more broad generalist, or does it need us to be an SME who goes very, very deep?
Right.
And, you know, we don't always have full autonomy over where we end up, what roles we're in, or what those opportunities are. And so you need to kind of, you know, look around you and yeah, make a plan to get to the kind of role you want to be in, but also figure out how to do what the business needs of you, where you are. Well,
yeah, exactly. And the third one is communications, which we've talked about. So maybe we'll just skip it and go to the next little section here, which is this is where we are. We don't have self-driving. We don't have autonomic networks. We don't have all this other stuff. So we don't communicate well. We tend to be more hedgehogs than we should be, perhaps, for the roles that we're in, stuff like this. So how do we solve this? Because Yvonne, right? No one's riding to our rescue. There is no cavalry.
Nobody's coming.
Nobody's coming. we are what we have, and that's what we have. And so, like, how do we deal with this? So my first place to start is this, is that maybe we even have the wrong goal. I worry a lot about this idea that we want to have vendors build for us self-driving networks that we don't have to do anything with. Like, it's like going to a car dealership and saying and you hear the car mechanic say, I really just want them to build cars that I don't have to work on. It would be totally dissonant. It would be weird to walk into a car dealership and walk to the mechanics and say, oh, I don't know why these cars just don't change their own tires. You know, they should just make cars that don't need to be worked on. And be like...
People say this kind of thing that feel very invincible and insecure in their jobs. I mean, it happens a lot. Sometimes in operations teams, well, this is too much work. Why do we have to do all this? Somebody else should just do all this.
Yeah.
And... You know, I've never felt that secure.
No, well, and not only that, but it's like, what value are you adding to the business as a person? Right. Where are you coming in and being helpful to the business? Is if all you are, if all you want to do is to take a service that an outside vendor is producing for you and repackaging it into the business.
Yeah, at some point you just become, vendor contract management.
Yeah.
And that's your job. And I guess if that's interesting, if that's the thing that gets you up in the morning, then you should do that. But that it is eventually, if everything gets outsourced and moved to somebody else, that is eventually what your job turns into.
Yeah.
It's managing contractors and holding them accountable.
Yeah. Or you end up working for the vendor that's building all the real stuff.
Oh, sure.
Right? That's pretty much what you get. I mean, I just think it's a weird, every time I hear this, I want a self-driving network, I'm thinking, I would like to build a self-driving network, but I want the business to have the view of it's a self-driving network. Right? That's my job, is to create a self-driving network for you, not to repackage a self-driving network someone else has built. Like, that's just weird to me. But anyway, so I wonder sometimes if we have the wrong goal.
When you made a plumbing analogy earlier, and as somebody who's just recently built a house, like, yes, when I walk up to my water faucet and turn it on right now, it just works. Mm-hmm. And I want it to just work. At the same time, like, we had to hire plumbers to come in and build the thing, right? Install the faucets and run the pipes and be sure everything was vented properly. So those things aren't mutually exclusive.
Yeah,
right. And right, and they right. We still need talent to do the work. And there is value in trying to find higher value work. At the same time, like, our entire economy is predicated on the fact that the companies we work for are going to always get increasingly more efficient.
Yes.
And create more value, right?
Yes.
And that we're on an up and to the right trajectory. The only way to get there is to continue to, frankly, do more with less. And that's a big part of what we're there to do. But it doesn't mean there's nothing to do.
Yeah.
It just means that the work is going to change and be somewhat different over time. Just like, Russ, you were talking about when we first got into networking, it was all dealing with the optics and that optical layer.
Yeah.
The idea that I think the thing you're pushing back on really is this idea that I don't want to work and I don't want to add value, right? Yeah. I want everything to be easy.
Yeah.
And that's just not reality. Yeah. At the end of the day.
It's not. I mean, plumbers aren't poor people by and large, by the way. And furthermore, plumbing has changed as well, right? When I was doing plumbing when I was a kid, it was sweat soldering. And by the way, I stink at sweat soldering. I would hire somebody to do it who has experience doing it any day of the week. And now they use PEX, and they use other ways of doing things, and they use distribution manifolds rather than planning out everything in a very specific way. Used to be, when you designed a house, you tried to stack the bathrooms first and second floor because you were running water and drain in a specific place in the house. Nowadays, because you run distribution manifolds, it's like 10 feet of PEX versus 20 feet of PEX. Who really cares? You just put the bathrooms wherever you want to. So there's like lots of things that have happened like that. But I still don't hear plumbers walk in the house and go, well, this house hasn't self-plumbed. You know? They still add value to the house building process.
Exactly.
They do. You know?
Right.
And so, yeah. So, okay. So the next goal I think we often get wrong is that we often think we are there to impress the business with our cleverness, our importance. You know, it's the job security thing, right, Tom? It's the, if I'm really important, nobody can fire me. And if I go and I rescue the network 10 times this year, ooh, look how important I am. I can put my cape on. Yeah, well, that's a wrong goal as well to me. First of all, you shouldn't work alone. And even as a team, you shouldn't have that goal, right? Your goal should be helping the business do what the business needs to do, not proving how clever you are. And that's going to sound really harsh to a lot of people, but It's just the way it really is. Okay, so that was my first two things. My third thing is we don't do very well at managing complexity because we either think we can get rid of it or we fail to think about it realistically and try to manage it. And we need to go back to thinking about trade-offs and finding the trade-offs, or go to thinking about trade-offs and finding the trade-offs and being very conscious of that. So that's kind of my next loop. The next thing I always say is become more like foxes. We've talked a lot about this, but like rather than my primary focus being on configuration or troubleshooting, because yeah, I have those skills, but it's going to take me longer to troubleshoot something than it would somebody who works in TAC. It's going to take me longer to configure somebody than somebody who works in TAC. And that's okay with me if I have to go look up commands, because it's not what I do every day. What I do every day is I do design, I do coding, I do process, I do life cycle. And this is another entire thing that I'm worried about right now is process versus architecture. But we need to rethink what our skill sets are and be intentional about that.
I think a place where this becomes evident why this is important is when I've done this before, been asked to come up with alternate proposals, way A versus way B, and you bring it in front of the decision makers and people who are signing checks are by definition, at least in large companies, they're never going to be at a detailed engineering level with you. And so you go present this to them and they're like, well, which one should we choose? And I've seen a lot of engineers be like, oh, I don't know, like pick one. I don't care. I came up with both of these options. Yeah. And that's I see disappointment with the decision makers when that happens. And I think the answer to that is actually finding and explaining the trade-offs. You can actually design a whole complex system without ever having examined the trade-offs. It's possible to create designs. I've seen designs created like that, even though it sounds crazy. How could you possibly design something and not know what the trade-offs are? But it happens all the time. And I think that like being able to explain, if you do this, then this is the consequence and this is how it all works. And this other thing that's not free either, if you do this, then there are these other things to think about. And this is why we need to choose between these. I think that examining trade-offs is really important.
And not just technical trade-offs, business trade-offs. If we make that technical decision, suppose, for instance, you say, I'm going to choose between segment routing and MPLS, SRv6 and MPLS. TE or whatever it is. There are business results to making those decisions in the long run. And we don't look for those business. We look for all the technical reasons to choose one or the other. We should be looking for how does that impact the business in 5 years? What does that restrict me from doing? What does that mean about the next time I roll out a new site or the next time I roll out? Like, what do those things do to me? And we don't put it in those terms. So you can't go to your manager and say, you know, I have this whole slide in here about don't communicate this way, communicate this way instead. Like, you can't walk in and say, here are your two options, pick one. And they say, well, what's the difference? I can say, well, for this option, you need a special license on your router.
Right.
Business people don't care about that. Like, who cares? Right? What they're going to care about is, okay, does this lead me down the path where I can buy generic equipment in 5 years and still build my network? Or does this leave me stuck having to buy specialized equipment for the rest of forever? That's a better way of putting that problem.
I had a couple of experiences working at a service provider where I was forced to, it was a small enough company, I was forced to show the revenue impact of the decisions and recommendations. And that was such an eye-opening experience for me. And that's also when I learned the true cost of headcount in any business. But it was really interesting and very impactful to me to say, this option built this way means that you will be cash flow positive on this particular product within these many months. If you choose this other thing, you're cash flow positive in these many months plus whatever it was.
Yeah.
And once it was so funny how much all the other details, once that was presented, how little anything else in the presentation mattered. And it was that's how it works. That's how real life is.
And by the way, this is how you get big architectural changes made, is you don't say, we need to solve this one problem, so we're going to change the entire architecture of the network. You say, this is going to solve this one problem, but it's going to set you up to do domino effect and give you flexibility to solve 20 other problems. And I don't even know what all those problems are going to be, but it's going to allow you to turn new product much more quickly. That's the way you have those kinds of conversations.
Well, anytime you can make an argument that some technology that you're implementing is going to generate revenue for the business, that's a completely different conversation than saying, hey, and so many companies view their IT operation as a cost center anyway. Hey, we have this cost center. In order to run this cost center better, but I can't really quantify what better means. I can't really tell you anything other than it's going to make me happier. We need to go spend X more dollars to basically deliver the same thing that you perceive we're delivering today. I mean, the business is going to say no to that. Yeah. And frankly, if that's how you present the conversation, they should, right? And so you have to think in terms of what generates revenue from the business. What's the opportunity cost if we don't do it? I think for me, and the book is dated now, but I read Good to Great several years ago, and Walgreens was listed in that book as one of the Good to Great companies. And if you think about what they did by building out this national network, this global network across all of their stores, that technology enabled them to fill prescriptions at any of their stores across the country, which became a huge competitive advantage over like a mom and pop pharmacist in your small hometown if you were traveling or if you moved around a lot. Those kinds of things make an incredible impact, but you've got to talk in those terms, and you've got to talk about how Russ, I think it was you who said it, maybe Tom, but we're absolutely right when you're like, this is how you get big projects done. You make a revenue argument, or you make in healthcare, it was, if we make this change, our nurses are going to spend 30 minutes less a day charting because their systems are going to be faster, right? They're going to be able to spend more time with patients. Those kinds of arguments go a lot further than, hey, we're going to put in the new, observability, SRE, DevOps hotness, and we're going to get to speak at our favorite vendors conference, right? That the business really, really doesn't care.
Yeah, absolutely not. And taking that one step further in communications, I hear a lot of people say, well, my business people don't understand technology. And I guess my big question there is, have you ever tried to spend time educating them about how the technology impacts their business? And I know there are very few programs at the college level or anything else, certificates or whatever, that do this. But have we ever thought about it? Do you sit down and think, I could spend time talking to my business leadership about how technology impacts, like you said, Yvonne, right? Not just in the context of this particular project, but like, okay, this is what it takes to get the nurses on the floor to spend less time, right? And this is the importance of that and connecting it to the business for them. I don't think we spend time doing that. And we do a lot of teaching amongst ourselves, maybe, and honestly, not as much as we should. But how much time do we spend talking to the business about the way things are going? What's new? Do you have meetings with that vice president? And he says, well, what's the newest thing in IT? And you say, well, it's DevSecOps. He says, what does that mean? Do you spend time educating them? And I think that's something that would open up a lot of lines of communication and be really helpful to us in the long run.
And make that a reciprocal conversation. Let them educate you, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot that we have to learn. And I think for me, one of the most humbling things in the last several years of my career is to realize how big the world is outside of my particular area of domain expertise. There is so much I didn't know and still don't know. I think maybe I have a little bit more self-awareness about that. But there's the world is a very big place full of all kinds of experts about all different kinds of things. And we ought not be too grandiose about our particular sliver of knowledge. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's pretty much the end of it. So I don't know. Any other thoughts? Anything we want to...
No, I think it's going to be a great presentation, or has been a great presentation, but, right?
Yeah, will be as well, because I talked on Thursday, so it's a couple of days from now.
It will be for us, but for the listener, it may be in the past. So
it may be in the past. That's correct. This is the relativity of time. Is that it? It's all the observer's perspective.
That's right.
So I don't know. I don't have anything else to add to that. Just, you know, it was just something that came to mind, and I thought it would be a good thing to talk about at KYNOG, and you know, see where it goes, see if people, what kind of reactions I get, and how people think about it. So I don't know.
I think they're important topics and things that I you know, Russ talks, and I'm like, man, I can still hear echoes of his influence over the course of my career and the things I tell my team now and the things that I say when I stand in front of customers. So I think it's going to be great.
Wow. That's a very sad thing, Yvonne.
No.
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
Okay. All right, Tom, where can people follow you or find you or talk to you or whatever they do?
LinkedIn is where I will be.
See, yours is just too short now. Like, we need to expand that somehow. I don't know, but anyway.
Add more syllables or something?
Yeah, LinkedIn. Add more syllables. Yeah. And Yvonne, other than the She Shed?
Yes. I'm also on LinkedIn, Yvonne Sharp, or on Twitter, now known as X, as Sharp Network.
Cool. I'm Russ White. I'm here at Rule11.Tech on The Hedge, LinkedIn. I do log into Twitter now, X, every now and again. I've been playing around with doing some new training stuff, so you can look for that on Rule 11. And I guess that's it. We thank you very much for spending time with us. And we know it's like a very attention-driven economy right now, and we know that your time is valuable. So we are happy that you spent this 45 minutes or whatever it was with us. And we will catch you next time.